with a public notice issued by the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources. The department hereby opens the public hearing on proposed amendments to portions of 225 CMR 16, the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, or APS, regulations. This is the first of two public hearings that the DOER will hold on the proposed amendments. The second hearing will be held Monday, August 7th, 2017, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Holyoke Community College, Kitteridge Center, 303 Homestead Avenue, Holyoke, Mass. As explained by the public notice, the proposed amendments make revisions in response to public comments to allow renewable thermal generation units to qualify for the APS program, as required by Chapter 251 of the Acts of 2014, now codified at MGL Chapter 25A, Section 11F and 1/2. The proposed amendments also make revisions to allow fuel cell and waste-to-energy thermal generation units to qualify for the APS program as required by Sections 3, 4, and 17 of Chapter 188 of the Acts of 2016, now codified at MGL Chapter 25A, Section 11F and 1/2. The purpose of this public hearing is to receive verbal and written comments on the proposed amendments to the Alternative Portfolio Standard portion of the regulations. As indicated in the public notice, written testimony will be accepted until 5 p.m. on July 17, 2017. This public hearing is being recorded, and the department requests that, to the extent possible, parties also submit written copies of their testimony. We'll now proceed with the comments in the order on the sign-in sheet.
So just to reiterate what James said, so Jim said we did extend the comment period on this yesterday. Late yesterday, we sent out an announcement to stakeholders that the comment period is now going to go through August 7th at 5 p.m. We'll also be holding another hearing in Holyoke on August 7th in the morning. So that information is on our website, and we will be filing a notice with the Secretary of the Commonwealth today so to get that officially in the state register.
So we don't have
register.
To do it by tomorrow, by Tuesday?
By Monday, 17. No. No, you do not. Yep. So with that, I guess we'll just quickly introduce all of ourselves, and then we'll begin. So I'm Michael Judge. I'm the Director of the Renewable and Alternative Energy Division.
Eric Stelzer, Deputy Director of the Division.
John Ballum, I'm the Engineering Manager, CHP Program.
I'm Samantha Mazarev. I'm a Renewable Thermal Program Coordinator.
James Corcoran, Attorney.
I'm David Lutz. I'm a Program Coordinator for the Renewables Division.
I'm John Parrott. I'm a Forester and Renewable Program Coordinator.
All right. So with that, I think we'll begin. So we have four people that signed up to testify. If others want to after, they may do so. And there's seeing, as we don't have so many people signing up, we won't set a time limit, so we're just going to go down the list and then we'll see who else wants to talk. So the first person we have is Eric Dubin. So if you'd please come up, podium.
Good morning.
We'll just ask with the acoustics of the room here as well, if you could just project, the microphone isn't working and so people at the back can hear you well too.
Morning, everyone. Glad everyone's here. I'm Eric Dubin from Mitsubishi Electric Cooling and Heating. We are manufacturers of high-efficiency air source heat pumps. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Matt Sui, who is our mechanical engineer. So the Mass APS has provided a unique opportunity for the state of Massachusetts to continue its national leadership in energy policy. By incorporating renewable thermal into the APS, the regulation will help further establish a thriving market for greenhouse gas reductions in energy-efficient heating and cooling systems in the state. The entire value chain will benefit because it will serve to bring more awareness to thermal technologies that are just beginning to thrive here in the state and accelerate them to the mainstream. So manufacturers, distributors, contractors, architects, engineers, builders, and building owners will all benefit as the pathway an economic model is established through higher volume of renewable thermal projects. So one important recognition we have experience with via the utility energy efficiency programs is the need for simplification. While those of us who have been working to establish, revise, and improve the APS renewable thermal regulations understand this need for simplicity in concept, the importance of constantly keying in on simplification is paramount to the program's success. Our experience has shown that even slightly complicated programmatic offerings will not be adopted by building owners, and particularly in the commercial space. For instance, the current utility custom programs are often ignored by building owners due to the perceived complexity. This results in significant consequences. Utilities don't capture the required energy efficiency savings. The beneficial technology doesn't get the benefit of raising its awareness and other issues. So in the case of the APS, we feel that an overly restrictive and complicated qualification process will again lead the program to be underutilized and having impacts down the line, including utilities not reaching their allocated APS requirements. We highly recommend that the Mass DOA respectfully consider simplifying the programs as much as possible. And we've made some suggestions in our testimony today, but mostly in our written testimony prior to the deadline for areas to consider. So it's our interpretation that the small, I want to talk about a couple of the different categories right now. It's our interpretation that the small category is too restrictive in its eligibility criteria for air source heat pumps. The result will be very few systems that qualify for the program. And it's primarily due to the multiple competing requirements that are favoring whole home renewable thermal installations for retrofits, which are actually quite infrequent in today's market. It'll lead to very low enrollment in the small category, which is the highest volume category, and thus has the biggest impact on awareness building. And we will, again, come up with some detail in our written testimony. So it becomes even more important as NEEP, the Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnerships, considers further integration of ducted heat pumps into their specification. At this time, the efficiency metrics that are required to qualify for the cold climate specification are very high, which causes most ducted systems to be disqualified. Now, one of the most important points to consider is that because of these requirements, it's clear that the program is aimed at whole home conversions. The first point is that whole home conversions to air source heat pumps are actually a rare event at this time, which will cause extremely low enrollment in the program. Now, second, without qualifying ducted equipment, it becomes nearly impossible to serve most of the whole home situations unless there's a head that's put in every single room in the home, which is highly cost prohibitive. So it may be possible that NEEP addresses this through creating a separate ducted specification. However, it's currently construed, the program will not succeed in retrofits, not in the construction category, but mostly in the retrofit market, because of the requirement to heat the entire home, and because it's an exception rather than the rule at this time. So we will have some more recommendations on how to address that. We also recommend that you allow some sort of non-renewable emergency heat. Many homes that would qualify will be disqualified if they have, say, a gas fireplace. So perhaps you can specifically prohibit certain types of emergency heat. Okay. And finally, I just want to talk about the large category. Our team has significant comments to share on the large category. However, we're still gathering details for the commentary, and we'll submit this in writing to the OER as soon as possible. Now, ideally, there's little difference between the intermediate and large categories except the actual size. The intermediate metering method requires measurement by watt-hour meters, and that's most acceptable. This keys back to earlier comments about simplification and maximizing participation. The intermediate category is currently the model category out of the three and will likely see the most activity. Now, we would recommend altering the large category to also some sort of simplified watt metering protocol, perhaps with the potential requirement for random sites around Massachusetts to be fully metered to serve as a baseline validation. We're investigating other methods of metering to satisfy the large category need for direct measurement. Some of the difficulty in following metering protocol for large VRF air source heat pumps in the APS draft are, for instance, equipment for measuring refrigerant mass flow rate is developed for laboratory use. And so its cost and its complexity doesn't lend itself well to use in field. It's also very difficult to find piping locations in VRF systems where the refrigerant state steady enough to make meaningful mass flow measurement rates. So mixed phase is actually very common. And potentially and likely will cost tens of thousands of dollars for equipment, setup, protection, and monitoring if appropriate equipment can actually be sourced. We'll be following up with more detailed information on the direct metering method recommendations for the large category as we receive it from our engineering teams and from our factories. I'd like to thank you very much for the time and all the efforts you're putting into the APS.
Thanks, Eric. So next we have Derek Hildreth.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Here's a copy of our comments today, and forwarding comments later. So I'm Derek Elder from Doosan Fuel Cell America. We are a fuel cell manufacturer based in South Windsor, Connecticut. We've been in business for 3 years as Doosan. We are the former UTC Power. And we appreciate the opportunity to provide initial comments regarding the amended draft regulations to the APS. Doosan certainly supports the inclusion of fuel cells as an eligible technology. So our initial comments are that we agree to using the proposed net carbon emissions rate for eligibility only instead of the additionally recommended 60% overall efficiency rate. The 60% efficiency rate would limit fuel cell projects to high thermal utilization CHP projects only, which are currently already eligible under the CHP portion of the APS. And we believe that the legislative intent was to add fuel cells on their own and not only CHP installations of fuel cells. Additionally, we are concerned about the long-term REC pricing, which is imperative to long-term projects and their viability. Uncertainty around REC market saturation could hamper project development as it adds financial uncertainty to very complex and involved finance projects. So we appreciate the opportunity to weigh in today, and we'll be submitting more formal comments later.
Thank you.
Next we have Kent Hartwig.
Good morning. My name is Kent Hartwig, Manager of Corporate Affairs for Renewable Energy Group. We are the North America leading producer in biodiesel and renewable chemicals. We're based out of Ames, Iowa, so it's a pleasure to be here in Boston, Massachusetts. So thanks for your hospitality. I'll be brief. We very much appreciate the inclusion of liquid biofuels into the RPS and support growing the market here in New England. We just have a few minor concerns and tweaks that we would respectfully request, and we'll be continuing to provide more in-depth written comment in the future. Specifically related to definitions in the area of ineligible energy sources, there's no definition of co-processing, and so we would support adding a definition of co-process where renewable biomass is processed with fossil fuels or other non-renewable feedstocks in that same unit, and then the fuel is then partially derived from renewable biomass. Under the dedicated energy crops, we will be providing a specific recommendation there, but we've requested that be reworked in some way. Related to eligible liquid biofuels, it specifically cites organic waste feedstock, and we would request removing the word organic, as we feel that the following definition provides that type of specific definition. We would also include used cooking oil, as well as oil co-product from crops grown from protein or for feed. Secondly, under eligible liquid biofuel supplier list, we support having a list of those individuals that will be suppliers. But when we discuss a quality assurance plan, we feel that limits your available suppliers from biofuel producers. We would suggest reducing that or eliminating that altogether. We don't feel as if the state of Massachusetts wants to dive into the RIN market or renewable fuel standard. Those suppliers should be provided with audits individual. And really, the QAP process isn't a guarantee of quality RINs. It's merely a financial backing for the biofuel producer to ensure that there's some sort of liability coverage if those RINs become fraudulent. So we don't see how this would get into an RPS situation. That's more of a biofuels producer and supplier and should be weighed in. Again, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. We will get you more of that written comment as we dive into this a little bit more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Richard Staterski.
Hi. My name is Richard Staterski. I am the originator of the Species Forest in Conway, a nonprofit, complete return to nature since 2001. It's a registered organization, nonprofit charity registered in Massachusetts as Species Forest Inc. Because of my involvement with that, I have learned a lot about forest extraction and what it does and what it doesn't do to our great northeastern forests. We live right in the middle of the only two returned forests in the world. You can tell by the stone walls and the mountains that the forest has returned. The other one is eastern China. In regard to the subject of today, I have a problem with the definitions of that are in the rule, such as just an example of forest-derived residue, and another one would be forest-derived thinning. There's no mention in these definitions that these are harmful when these residues are removed, that they are harmful to the species forests. Just like alcohol is sold legally, cigarettes are sold legally, but there's a warning, extraction of resources from the species forest of Massachusetts is harmful. So that should be right in the definition. It is better to leave that residual from logging or from wind damage in the forest. It has valuable use. The time for looking at making these regulations in favor of extraction are over, I think. And from Obama on down, the myth continues that biomass is renewable and does not harm the atmosphere, and it certainly does. That is a definitely a myth. At worst, a lie. At best, highest lie. So I would recommend that in every one of these definitions, that there be inserted a warning that removal of these things is harmful to the forest. If you don't like to use the word species forest, which is plural possessive, it means the forest of the species, the other species, not us. If you're going to use these definitions, you should add a warning that it is harmful. Silviculture is harmful. Extraction is harmful. You cannot continue to any use, extraction, or use of the forest is harmful to the native forest, to the natural landscape. Natural landscape is defined as a landscape in the soul, under the sole control of natural forces and processes. That doesn't mean man. So I would advise you to add this warning to these definitions, every single one of these definitions, and that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so that's the last person we have signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina Fisher here on behalf of Bloom Energy. We want to thank the department for including fuel cells in the open APS regulatory proceeding. Bloom Energy is a provider of solid oxide fuel cell technology that produces reliable baseload power using a highly resilient and environmentally superior non-combustion process. Bloom Energy has over 200 megawatts installed across 11 states. Several of our customers include Home Depot, Staples, and IKEA, all of which are eager to adopt our technology at locations here in Massachusetts. Bloom is very excited to have the possibility to enter the Massachusetts market. Overall, Bloom Energy is incredibly supportive of the regulations for us today. However, we do have one strong concern over the inclusion of a overall, that all fuel cell generation must meet an overall efficiency of 60%. This standard is problematic for several reasons. First off, it would essentially prevent most fuel cells from being developed here in Massachusetts unless there are limited circumstances where there is a matching thermal load, and those customers can already participate in the APS through the CHP, SDHP projects. Additionally, we believe that there is already a conflicting standard that all APS generators must meet a net carbon emissions rate established by DOER at least every 2 years. We believe that that is the appropriate standard that should be used, and the overall efficiency, the overall 60% efficiency standard should be removed. Lastly, Bloom is very supportive of the language requiring a review of the APS minimum standard by the end of 2020. We encourage that the department act sooner, especially if other additional technologies are added in the future. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today. We'll be submitting written comments.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christina. All right, anyone else that would like to testify? Oh, yes.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is James McCaffrey. I'm with the Partnership for Policy Integrity, and we do appreciate this opportunity to comment not only today, but also the department for extending the comment period to provide opportunities for additional input from folks across the state and for scheduling the additional public hearing. It's greatly appreciated by advocates and folks that are concerned about the solar on the state. For the purposes of our comments today, we will be turning in extensive written comments as we've done in the past. I wanted to focus again on the biomass components and specifically on some of the monitoring and performance standards that have been established in the regulations. We see these as still, despite some of the work that's been done, as being substantively flawed and weakening existing protections and particularly creating concern on the monitoring and the enforcement front for the performance standards for the thermal units. And I'll give you just a few examples, and again, we will go into much greater technical detail in our written comments. But I wanted to highlight a few of our concerns up front here today. One concern is that the guideline on biomass states that for the boilers between 1 MMBTU per hour and 3 MMBTU per hour, that the testing for emissions is to be conducted within 3 to 6 months or every 3 years of operation. But later on, the regulations actually state that a manufacturer's guarantee or evidence of testing for similar units of the same model would be sufficient. And we do not believe that just a statement of design can be a substitute for actual emissions testing, which then leads into the concerns that we have that DOER is basically accepting the European test results as sufficient evidence that a unit would actually meet the APS emissions criteria. The problem with this approach is that using the European test results, which typically burn a wood that is much drier than 35% moisture content as required by the draft regulation, what you'll find is that the day-to-day emissions of any APS-eligible units are actually likely to significantly exceed any tested results. Results from the test would not be representative of the actual performance of the units in the field, and you would be basically putting, you know, sensitive populations or other areas at risk with emissions that are significantly higher than what we believe that you would like to try and achieve with the regulations. So that should be corrected. And another fine point of detail there is that the European uses the different chip grades with the much drier moisture content, and also the ash content of these chips is consistently below 0.5%, and DOER is specifying 1.5% ash content for the chip standard. So right there, you immediately have a discrepancy between the standard that you're referencing and what's actually going to be happening here in the field. Because the boiler emissions are very so closely tied to the chip quality of what you're actually burning. So the regulations should be changed to specify and require that the units that are being tested are actually using the same fuel quality that we expect will actually be burned during practical usage here. This also would, of course, lead to a practical outcome where it would be difficult to monitor and track. And so inevitably, you'd have significantly more particulate matter being emitted than what is proposed in the actual guideline. The next concern that we have is that DER, and we have raised this in the past, is allowing the use of the emissions test, the EN303-5 test, which has been recognized as flawed by EPA and others. And the reason why we're concerned about that is because it's conducted at a high load in a steady state, and it's a hot filter method that does not assess the condensable organic emissions, which compromise a significant amount of what you get for respirable particulate matter. The other way to say that is that you'll miss a large percentage of the emissions that are coming out if you're using this test method, and DOER should really be relying on EPA's new source performance standard, the NSPS, to require emissions testing for biomass boilers at below 15% of full load, as opposed to the EN303-5 test, which only tests down to 30% load. So what you effectively will have happening is that you'll be masking poor performance of these units if you're not using consistent or better standards. And this also, again, as we've raised in the past, is somewhat puzzling to us because EPA's new source, the NSPS for EPA Step 2, is actually going to be implemented, and they will no longer accept any units based on the EN3035 test data after 2020. So while the regulation is requiring DOER to use best available control technologies, the regulation itself is actually referencing a standard that EPA itself no longer supports and actually will be completely out of date in just a couple of years. So we're somewhat puzzled why there would be a more lax standard and something that's going to be totally obsolete in just a couple of years. So these burners would not even be meeting EPA standards. One other technical concern that we had is this boiler size gap that we noted in the comments. As written, the regulations leave the gap of unregulated wood boilers between the residential size, which would be covered by the EPA standard, and the 3 MMBTU per hour, which is where the DEP regulations kick in. The regulations should eliminate this gap by requiring that all boilers that are less than 3 MMBTU per hour actually meet EPA's stricter standard that's not being utilized right at the moment. And then the standard itself is not even consistent with what other New England states are doing. For example, Vermont and New Hampshire enacted regulations that articulate that units smaller than 2.5 MMBTU are subject to the requirements of the residential wood heater NSPS under EPA, and we are not sure why, even at a minimum, Massachusetts would want to adopt a standard that is more lax than our neighboring states. So our overall concern is that this biomass component of these regulations is still deeply flawed, inconsistent with other regulations, weakens existing standards, and we still feel strongly that DOER needs to remove this from the regulation until such time as some of these flaws and standards and inconsistencies can be corrected, because this clearly represents a weakening of the existing standards. We will also include in our comments, and you'll likely hear from others today, how this also significantly weakens the standard that was established for the RPS for biomass in 2012. And we continue to also be concerned that we have an extremely strong precedent-setting standard that the world is watching. It has international implications and significance and tremendous work and leadership that Massachusetts has shown. And this is basically setting up a whole new standard on the forestry front and greenhouse gas emissions front and on the monitoring front that doesn't seem to be consistent with where we were heading in 2012 after great public effort. So we urge you to continue to improve the biomass portion, perhaps promulgate the portions of the regulation that are clearly broadly supported by others and that we don't have significant concerns from our organization on, but the biomass and woody biomass thermal part of this, we urge you to please remove and revise to be consistent with the recommendations that we made in both our previous comments and the comments that we'll be submitting very shortly. We can do better, but we do thank you for all your efforts and all the work that's gone into this. We hope we can help to have you continue to improve them. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to?
Yep.
Hello, my name is Meg Sheehan, and I am here in my personal capacity, as well as a board member of the Policy Partnership for Policy Integrity, which is a nonprofit that has been working on the bioenergy issue for a number of years. I'm an attorney. I have a lifetime of conservation advocacy in Massachusetts. I'm a native of Plymouth, and I've been involved with a wide range of land protection, conservation, water protection, air protection groups my entire life. I will focus my comments on the biomass and the forest protection components of the regulations, which we believe are deeply flawed. In terms of a little more about my background, in 2010, I led the successful Stop Spewing Carbon campaign, which Jay earlier referred to, that led to the current biomass RPS regulations. Those were developed with broad-based input from leading global scientific experts on forest protection, as well as from many other stakeholders and public health experts. Those are landmark regulations that made Massachusetts a leader when it comes to using our forests and wood to create renewable energy. There were over 200,000 Massachusetts voters who voted for a ballot question that would have put a question on the ballot to limit subsidies for renewable energy credits that used forests to burn for electricity. So those standards are in place right now, and our campaign is very concerned that the current APS regulations undermine those scientific and legally valid regulations, and we're urging you to take a second look at those. The current APS regulations threaten our forests. Here in Massachusetts, our forests are part of the character of our state. They reflect hundreds of years of careful conservation efforts, stewardship, and are really part of the ethics and character of our state. They're the lungs of the planet. These regulations, the APS regulations, are intended to do something about climate change. And it really is ironic that here we are burning the lungs of our planet in order to create green energy. And if we are going to do that, we're not wholesale against doing that, but we really need to keep these scientifically valid regulations in place and not roll them back. We're urging DOER to withdraw the regulations as they relate to biomass and to redo them and put in the 2012 standards that we have, and there are three reasons why. First and foremost, there is really no scientifically valid reason to have two different standards for burning the forest for green energy. We have terrific standards right now that we're leaders, global leaders, on the use of bioenergy from forests for renewables, and the forest really doesn't care whether it's burned for electricity or whether it's burned for thermal. So we want you to put those standards back in place in this set of regulations. Secondly, we feel the public comment that you conducted in terms of this issue, the forest protection issue, was improper in that you deferred to third-party standards, including guidelines from other organizations, and letting Massachusetts voters and residents have a say on what standards we should have in our state to protect our forests. We don't support importing into these regulations some policy from a group that is a national group or international group or whatever. We want our standards to be specific for our state. And finally, the third point is that there is a requirement that a baseline study be conducted before 2020, I believe it is. That's not going to be done in time. It's not going to be done before you put these regulations in place and let them go ahead to be used to get credits for burning the forest. So we want a baseline study in place before these regulations take effect. So you should, in effect, be at least staying the biomass portion of the regulations until you conduct that baseline study so we can actually see what the impact is of these regulations on our forests. So in sum, to put it straightforward, you know, we all support renewable energy, and DOER has done a great job with putting in place, you know, incentives for renewables, solar, wind, etc. But if we're going to be using our forests for renewable energy, we really need to make sure that we're not undermining public health, climate protection, and the strong legacy of forest protection here in Massachusetts. So I'd like to thank you for agreeing to hold a hearing in Western Mass and for extending the deadline for comment. I hope that you'll all go to Western Mass and listen carefully to the public health and forest communities there who have led the fight for protecting our forests. It's a statewide issue. I'm from southeastern Mass. It's a big concern there because, as you know, we have Miles Standish State Forest and ecologically rare pine barrens there. So please listen to the citizens of Massachusetts, the voters who care a lot about this, and take a second look at the regulations. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Okay. Seeing no one. We will stay here until the end of the hearing time, but feel free to mingle among yourselves or leave, but we'll stay in case anyone wants to come and testify, so we'll be here until 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. That's true.